Hey everybody, in this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're talking about everything you ever wanted to know about the amazing Amazon Wonder Woman. Let's do it!
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Yes!
The best theme songs.
I want to spin around in my chair right now.
Go ahead. Nobody's stopping you.
I'm attached to a wire. This microphone's expensive. It's not worth it, but I'm compelled.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. This is the theme song to the great 70s series Wonder Woman, starring Linda Carter as Diana Prince, Wonder Woman herself. This is Comic Book Exchange. This is a show that gets together every week or so. And we talk about all the latest happenings and maybe sometimes the creators that bring all these four-color comics to your eyeballs every single week, whether at your local comic shop, maybe your digital storefront if you're buying it on there. One of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And Lex Michael is who I am, and I am all over social media at TheLexMichael.
And of course, folks, you can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Lex Michael requires that. And, you know, it's been a while since I, you know, how are you doing?
Well, you know, it's always touch and go. I've commented on other venues in the past, recent past, that I hope that when medical science finally pins down this disease as a collection of symptoms, that they will name it after me.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, as I, to my knowledge, am the only known case of a human being that literally needs 5-star reviews to fuel their body.
You've never watched She, have you?
And of course, folks, you can hop on the YouTube channel. Give it a thumbs up while you're there as well, too. And Lucretia, of course, has the computer up and running, which means our resident Oracle is in the house. So feel free to hop in the chat, share your thoughts about anything we're talking about today, or just comic books in general. Just love to hear any of your thoughts. But we're going to kick it off here, of course, with, we're talking about the biggest news, probably, if you guys were watching. If you were anywhere near a computer screen, I think it was last Friday night that it dropped, right? The teaser trailer for Black Panther. Yeah. Oh man, and Lex is already not interested in this.
What?
In any way, shape, or form.
I actually so far in the other direction that, and maybe my tune will change when we see a trailer for that movie. But I am now more excited for Black Panther than I am for Infinity War.
Interesting. Well, yeah. True. I mean, I guess it's easy now without having any sort of context. You're just thinking like the idea of like all these heroes together, but not having any sort of visual.
I'm sure when I see the trailer, every time a trailer for one of these movies drops, I'm like, this is now the thing I am most excited for in life. So we're continuing that cycle. But this trailer, it looks astounding. The coolest thing about it to me is when Ryan Coogler was hired to make this movie, and Ryan Coogler, of course, directed Creed and Fruitvale Station before that, they allowed him to essentially pick his own team and deviate a bit from the in-house Marvel Studios style. And we're seeing that all over this trailer in a way that feels so immediate and vital and exciting. And I'm super pumped.
What about you, Lucretia?
Yeah, like, I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about this movie because it's not a character that I really know well, but I loved him in Civil War, so I'm like, I'm really looking forward to this, and I think that Bucky will be a part of the movie as well, and a lot of my favorite actors, like, you know, Danai Gurira from Walking Dead, and yeah, just, oh,
and, like,
so
you
good.
Got Lupita Nyong'o, and you got Forrest Whitaker, and then you've got Martin Freeman coming back, and you've got Andy Serkis coming back as Claw. Frank, you and I were talking other day about how I love seeing him in the trailer. We didn't know for sure that he was coming back until pretty late in the game. We all assumed, because Claw is historically, canonically, a Black Panther villain, but there was no official confirmation that Serkis would be returning. He appeared, of course, in Age of Ultron. What I think is really cool about what we're seeing so far is that he shows up without an arm. And if you haven't watched all of these movies, as I'm sure there will be audience members in the theater for Black Panther that haven't seen every Marvel Studios movie, just, all right, well, he's a villain with one arm. We've seen that in fiction before, and you maybe don't need to read too much more into it. But if you have seen all of these movies, you remember that he doesn't have an arm because Ultron threw a tantrum and cut it off in the second Avengers movie.
Yeah, and we all know how much I love one-arm dudes from, you know,
Marvel. One of your weirdly specific
you know, fetishes there.
Yes.
But yeah, Michael B. Jordan's in the movie. Speaking of
Michael B. Jordan, yes, collaborating with Coogler again.
Angela Bassett. I love him.
Is in the movie.
Who was Amanda Waller, and you forget about it because that Green Lantern movie is forgettable. But then you're like, oh well, now she gets to really throw her hand in it. Hopefully a better standing movie.
And what I like about it is he brought such a fun and unique look to the boxing film with Creed that I am so excited just from the trailer, as you were mentioning, Lex, just what he's going to do visually with this film. I think it's going to be really cool. And I'm glad that Marvel is taking this opportunity now that they've been so far in, that's since 2007 doing these films, now to, you know, start branching out, knowing that they need to start keeping the audiences on their toes and freshening up their style with different directors.
Yeah, and really letting those directors break the mold, whether it is a Ryan Coogler or now giving James Gunn even freer rein than he had in the past to go big and weird cosmic stuff. I applaud them because Marvel is owned by Disney. Disney is a corporation, and a corporation is always looking to make the most money while minimizing risk as much as possible. I like that they trust the Marvel brand enough, and that Marvel and Disney trust the audience enough to turn out for this if they start coloring outside their previous lines, as it were.
And how great is it that James Gunn is now getting a third Guardians of the Galaxy, and he started out, as I know, from Slither, which is a movie that I love because I love Nathan Fillion and I love Michael Rooker and Elizabeth Banks. It's such a funny movie, but it was like a cult classic. And just to see how far some of these people have come, and Joss Whedon being among them, is, you know, Marvel makes dreams come true.
It is amazing, though, where it's, you know, certainly all these films were originated with the comic books. I mean, that was the source material for all of this. But I feel like you're seeing so much more chances, at least now, where you see Guardians of the Galaxy. You've seen, just at least the Thor Ragnarok trailer.
Oh,
and
also
stuff with Black Panther, that you're seeing more excitement and chances taken with these characters than we're seeing in the comic books, which is unfortunate because they just feel like they're trying to, instead of being the originators, now they're just trying to play catch-up and trying to latch onto what people think may be cool about the films and not succeeding.
Yeah, because that's what sucks is, you know, Marvel announced that World of Wakanda was canceled from Black Panther, and it's like, really? On the heels of the release of the trailer, you're going to cancel this, you know, big publication here?
And as well as Black Panther and the Crew. That was canceled as well, too. I mean,
after two issues.
Yeah.
Which was strange. I remember when that announcement was made, and I forget who it was, but I was, you know, scrolling through Twitter, and somebody was pointing out, like, I am a big fan of Ta-Nehisi Coates. I read Black Panther. I hadn't even heard of Black Panther and the Crew until this cancellation announcement. That seems like a problem.
Definitely. And it's, you know, but I also think that Marvel maybe going too fast with the Black Panther stuff. Let it, you know, certainly he's been established, but I don't know if Black Panther is a character that can maintain multiple series. And I feel like that's the same thing maybe trying to do with Inhumans, that you just go too fast with too many series. Let's just do one and just really do that very well. And then, say, after the movie comes out, or after the with Inhumans, after the TV show comes out, and you see that really just increase in popularity, then maybe you start getting people more excited about it.
Yeah, I do agree that they're spreading themselves a little too thin at this point because, yeah, they've got so much in the works because, like, even though with the movies and film, or movies and TV, rather, that X-Men is sort of separate and, like, you know, Spider-Man is sort of separate, but it really is all Marvel, and they're just spread out on every network right now, and same thing with the comics is there's so much out there, it's hard to get people really involved with any of it at this point.
Because I feel like, as much as I enjoyed Black Panther, I almost in time since I view him as sort of like the Submariner, where he's really cool, but I can never really hold on to a book of his own for very long. But he's a great addition in any book that he's in. I mean, he's in the Ultimates right now that Al Ewing is doing, and that's a lot of fun to read, too.
That's a very cool book.
But it's like he doesn't have to have the responsibility of carrying that whole series himself. It's great. You can kind of change your focus and don't have to worry about that.
Did either one of you guys, have you read any of Coates' run on it?
I read the first few issues, and I think, and then I still have some left on my iPad that I haven't caught up with. So I feel like that right there tells me that I wasn't as sucked in as I wanted to be.
See, and I remember reading an interview with him where he was talking about he felt like, to a certain extent, that he was figuring out how to write for comics in the style of one of the big two companies as he was doing it. And I think you can feel that a little bit, but I thought it was really interesting that it was less about Black Panther as a superhero and more about T'Challa as ruler of a nation that is divided within itself. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I'm not caught up on it, but I remember I've read the first two-ish volumes of worth of issues. And I remember thinking there was so much there that is so powerfully compelling. And I wanted to see that book get a bigger audience. It got a lot of attention because you attach a writer like that to a character like Black Panther, people are going to take notice. But I feel like there was this fever pitch when it was first announced, and then the talk quieted down a little bit. And I feel like that's almost a shame because they're telling a lot of really really compelling, really deep, interesting political stories, too, about the nation of Wakanda. And I think that's all excellent. And I'm not sure why, necessarily, that these books don't have more of an audience.
True, because I always feel like with Tom King's Vision series, it only ran 12 issues, but I still felt like even by the end of it, there was still a lot of buzz about it. And I don't know if 12 issues in with the Black Panther series, that same buzz wasn't really there. It kind of tapered off as the series went along.
And I wonder, too, though, I wonder how much of that, because I'm not looking necessarily at how Marvel is pushing which books, like how aggressively and in what ways. I see what is going to be coming out, and I say, well, I'm interested in that character, that writer, that artist, what have you, and that's how I decide what to pick up. But I'm wondering if they're getting these in front of their audience effectively. Like, again, the one person on Twitter who had not even heard of Black Panther and the crew until it was canceled. That does seem odd. It seems like there was that statement that came out a few weeks ago. When was this? It was weeks, months, maybe. But somebody from Marvel was talking about how they perceived the problem with sales to be related to diversity.
Yes.
And it seems like if nobody can even find the books with the diverse cast, there's another problem.
Yeah, problem is promotion and marketing. You know, you can't blame diversity being the issue if you're not promoting these to where people know that they exist, because I had not heard of this book till I read that article.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it feels kind of frustrating to see these characters, which I feel like there are people that are excited about this. I feel like these books should have came out. I feel like Marvel operates where they want to be able to have stuff in bookstores. That when the film does come out, like, they can go to Barnes & Noble or anything else and all of a sudden see a bunch of trades for Black Panther.
Right.
But I feel like I think that you're hoping that the book's going to last that long that you can get those trades in the store by then. I feel like if they would have waited till just kept the one series and waited till the film came out, and then all of a sudden, whoa, we've got all this great, then we have all these great stories. The film's a success. People are hungry for this character. Then let's start putting out these other series and get people excited going to comic book stores.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But who knows? I mean, that is definitely Marvel's tactic, to flood the marketplace with a bunch of miniseries and ancillary series in preparation for a film coming out. So by that time it does, then you've got all these trade paperbacks and varying degrees of quality.
Sure.
But I feel like for somebody like Spider-Man, anytime a Spider-Man film is coming out, they'll pump out a bunch of miniseries regarding like whatever villain that he's facing. They'll do a bunch of miniseries, but you know, Spider-Man's never going to get canceled by Marvel.
Well, there's also still consistently, like you were talking about how maybe it seems like they're spreading themselves a little thin with multiple Black Panther books, but I feel like at any given moment, there's about 6 Spider-Man titles that are ongoing, and those all seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, just about, like, there are some characters that just, they cannot hold, I guess, readers' interest for a very long amount of time. They're very beloved, but yet they just, if you give them a series, it will end after 6, 12, maybe, if you're lucky, 18 issues.
Oh.
And I don't know what that magic formula is to take, you know, how do you take somebody that's... Because even, like, Iron Fist, when, like, Brubaker and Faction did it, I mean, it went... I think they were there for 18 issues, and then they left.
It was, like, almost 20.
Yeah. And then Dwayne Strzuski, however you pronounce his name, he took over. And it was it was a well-received run, but the numbers just started dropping off as soon as Faction and Brubaker left.
Which is so weird, considering you see that one of the most popular things right now is Spider-Gwen and Gwenpool, which are, you know, a relatively new incarnation, the spinoff, that is doing so well, and these beloved characters from years back aren't even pulling those numbers.
No, that's true. Yeah. I just want a cool Black Panther series. I'd love a cool Submariner series, but, you know.
Yeah.
You can't hold it. What am I asking for things that are never going to happen?
One day, Marvel Studios will announce the Namor the Submariner movie, and then you're going to have about 6 Namor books happening at one time.
Man, I would
and
love
I
that.
Wanted a Namor series with David Boreanaz, like, after Angel, but he got Bones instead. Like, I was like, that would have been really cool, because he would have been a good...
I mean, even going back Submariner. To, like, at one point, like, wasn't The Rock, like, rumored to be, like, he may be the Submariner.
But
like,
now he's going to be Black Adam or Shazam, whatever you want to call him now.
He's going to be Black Adam, and he wants Army Hammer, maybe, to be Shazam, I think, was the last I heard of this.
I'm like, are they the same?
Yeah, Army
I'm
Hammer.
I'm just like, keep and making Army these Hammer movies. Just bury me in these movies. Yeah. They're not all going to be good. Some of them are. Just bury me in them.
Yeah, Armie Hammer should be Hal Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe he could, because I feel like the Lone Ranger when he was that film, whether it was the script or him, just that the Lone Ranger came off as just a knucklehead, and I was like, no, Lone Ranger's supposed to be cool, and he played him like a buffoon.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I've seen Armie Hammer in other stuff, even his little short stint on Veronica Mars, he came off as a very Hal Jordan type, and I didn't see the Lone Ranger. Sorry for my friend that was in that, but
he was he was Winklevoss's in Social Network.
Yeah, and he
was
exactly. He was pretty good in that.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He was in that too, which I've only watched part of it.
And I've still not seen. Which I hear good things about
good things
it,
about
but I have not caught up with it yet.
As well, and of course, you got Henry Cavill in there. So, and who already did a really good job in there. Speaking of other Marvel news, though, we've of course got Marvel announces Punisher End of Days.
I like this idea because the Punisher is very much a Wolverine type character where he is just this brute, you know, forest guy that always seems like he's on the end of his stick. And I really like these stories because, as I said, I hate origin stories. I am so over them at this point. I'd rather see a superhero on his end, and a superhero that I love so much, like Frank Castle's the Punisher, like, this intrigues me.
I'm on board. It actually really took until John Bernthal for me to be all in on the Punisher.
Have you seen Dolph Lundgren's the Punisher?
Yes, I have. I always felt like Frank Castle. He's so cool to look at, and like the anger, the rage. It's a lot of what people like about Batman. Only he's got way bigger lethal weapons
and
than
he
Batman
kills
does.
People.
But for some reason, Punisher always reminded me, and it's odd because Punisher existed pre-90s, but Punisher reminds me of 90s comics for some same way that Venom does.
Yeah.
Reminds me of like the most like, let's throw a bunch of spikes on this costume and make everything raw and awesome.
Like, Punisher to me, if you put music behind him, it is definitely 90s grunge. So I see that because it's like, yeah, some Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots, like, just like he has that 90s anger feel. Like, so I think that's why I love him so much, because I love all the Punisher movies. The Lexi Alexander one, the Tom
Jane
one.
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. They're just fun, and this is a fun character.
Ray Stevenson punches a dude so hard that his fist goes through his face.
It's so funny. And then the Tom Jane one, when Mark Colley comes in and just starts playing in time, like, in the middle of the movie, for no reason at all, you're like, this is a good movie.
I remember going back and reading the original Punisher War Journal series and thinking that was really interesting, but never feeling grabbed in my gut by it. Mm-hmm. I've got a few digitally because around the same time I grabbed those issues, I grabbed a handful of issues of other Punisher series that are a little more recent. I grabbed like Welcome Back Frank, and I grabbed some like Punisher Max stuff, and I've got to go back and actually start digging into all of it. But this I'm excited about. But what is the premise of this series? Do we know?
Yeah, basically, as I say, it's mirroring the Daredevil End of Days, where it's sort of like Frank's last mission as the Punisher, you know, very similar to Old Man Logan and the Logan movie, which you saw sort of based on that, is it's sort of wrapping up his story, because as a character, this character has an end. He's just a regular guy.
He's an angry dude who kills people.
Yeah, I mean, he's like Mr. Furious, but not played by Ben Stiller.
No. It's with these kind of ending storylines, I feel like it's a chance for Marvel to have their cake and eat it too, because these are characters that pretty much can never die, because Marvel constantly resets their timeline. And
it's always the saying is like comic book stories are always second act.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So this is, and I always feel like these stories are they go either two ways. Either they become just very forgettable because nobody cares about them, or they really grab everybody so much that they start reading into present day continuity of these characters. Like, oh my gosh, are they leading up to that? Is that a little hint about like, could this be the real future of Frank Castle? Is this what it's building up to? Much like they do like with The Dark Knight, where everything that you'd put in Batman is, wait, does that mean that The Dark Knight's in continuity? This is going to be the real future of Batman? So neither one is that exciting for me. I hate when people start like looking into every little detail and like speculating, like this subtle silhouette in the back must mean this is a tie-in to his death story. I'm like, oh really, guys? Come on, can't it just be just something in the moment and it's fine? Ugh.
I'm all for interpreting symbols mm-hmm. in fiction, but yes, there is a line past which it becomes a little pedantic.
Yes.
Like, not everything is a clue. Even in, like, watching the new Twin Peaks, right, where that show has always rewarded you looking very closely at yeah. minute details, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single weird thing you see is a clue of some kind.
Yeah, or anything by Vince Gilligan, whether it was X-Files episodes he did, or Breaking Bad, or Better Call Saul, it's just like, every little thing, you're like... And then it turns out into nothing.
Also, we've got in the latest Batman issue, Batman mm-hmm. asks Catwoman to marry him.
Sure does.
You yeah. know what? And it made national news, guys.
Yeah, even Kellyanne Conway herself weighed in on this, being really excited that they could find love. I thought that was funny.
Have either of you been reading any of the Tom King run on Batman?
I am. I actually just got caught up and read this issue yesterday or the day before. Mm-hmm. I read that one and the one before it, which was another one-off with Swamp Thing.
That was a great story.
I dug that a lot, and I really like what Tom King is doing. I was so into the majority of Snyder's run that when Tom King took over, there was for me definitely an adjustment period. Mm-hmm. It was just not what I'd been used to reading in that book. Once my brain made that shift, I am now very into it. And this is interesting to me because it's, I think, maybe the first time in the main continuity that we've seen this, but it's not the first time that Bruce and Selina have ended up together, right? No. There's one of the alternate Earths where the two of them are married. Is it on Earth 2?
Yep.
And their daughter is Huntress?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've seen it done in an Elseworlds story, but we have never, to my knowledge, seen it in the main continuity of the books.
Does the idea of a married Batman... kind of like this, do you like that idea? Do you feel like, no, Batman is a character that should forever remain single and just be so he could play that really millionaire playboy image?
Well, he does hang out with young boys, so I'm kind of glad that he did get married or is going to get married.
Could be a beard migration.
Yeah.
For me, it comes back to this idea that comic books are always second act stories. So I'm open to it because I love what they're doing in some of these titles, that one included, right now. I'm down to see where this goes. But I figure comic books having stories told the way that they are, either the engagement gets drawn out for a very long time and something happens and they never get married, or they do get married and within a year or two, they're no longer married. Somebody, whenever the doomsday clock thing ends, yeah. I assume once they battle Dr. Manhattan for all of reality, some things are going to be reshuffled yet again. I would be shocked if that was not one of them.
Yeah, Batman is like your favorite sitcom character. He's never going to be happy. And that's the thing, is like, you're happy. And two, I know the continuity of Earth 2 that made the Huntress, and that was like the Huntress I was familiar with until the Bert Nellini one. And I'm just like, I'm okay with it, but I just know it's never going to end well. Batman can't ever be happy.
Yeah, and it's, I feel like you can't have them get married and get divorced, because mm-hmm. I don't feel like nobody wants to see Batman as a divorced person. Like, I just don't right. think that's something DC would want to, like,
Selina Kyle alimony.
Yeah, so I think the only way they could go is like a long-term engagement yeah. that ends up not going to fruition, right. and then it breaks up. I can never actually see them pulling the trigger and saying, you know what, we're going to get them married, because that only means that at some point somebody else is going to come along and say, why is Batman married? That's mm-hmm. ridiculous. He should just be a single dude. Unless then you have to do a really convoluted story to get around, almost like with Batman, with Spider-Man and Mary Jane, mm-hmm. in a way so that you could end the marriage, but it's not by divorce, because nobody wants to see a divorced Spider-Man. That's not, you know, it's like Spider-Man's supposed to be young and cool and hip. He's not a divorced dude.
Yeah, he's not just sticking his hand down his pants, laying on the couch like, oh, Mary Jane.
So I will be curious. I mean, Tom King, definitely, he always has long-term plots in his head. So I am curious to see where this is going. And I don't know. I mean, for me, it would be interesting. Because they brought Superman back after Rebirth, where he's married now. They brought back the pre-New 52 continuity,
yes.
where it's Superman, Lois Lane, they're married. Now they have a son, Jonathan. And that's great.
Superman's that makes
like,
sense.
Yeah. yeah. And I think that's cool. Superman is like everybody's dad. You always want, he's like the cool dad in town. And it's like, you want to have Superman as your dad. That's awesome. So, I mean, the idea, I don't mind them if they decided, like, you know, this would be something that we really are committed to. And we'll stick it out and see, have Catwoman and Batman be married and see what that would be like.
And we'll also see, too, because we're about to start a new story arc in that series. I believe we're about to start the War of Jokes and Riddles.
Yes.
So we'll see how much time they even have to devote to the engaged life of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle.
And I'm curious to see how they're going to play this, because the big thing, if you haven't read the Button issues... It was the Flash Batman.
Yes.
But at the end, where they get a chance to go to Flashpoint Earth, and Thomas Wayne, when they meet him, just tells Bruce, you know, don't be Batman. Don't do it for me. Go on, do something else with your life. Be happy. I mean, I just feel like that is still noodling around in Bruce's brain, which is interesting. And just to see what happens, at least temporarily, with that character, is he's kind of trying to figure out what he should do with his life.
Are we gonna arc him towards where we arc Val Kilmer and Batman Forever, where eventually we're gonna get comic book Batman Bruce Wayne having his "I'm both Bruce Wayne and Batman, not because I have to be now." Because I choose.
Well, see, I was actually thinking of like Dark Knight Rises Batman, like where he does
where he
go
actually
off
does
and,
get
like,
to go and ride off into the sunset with Selina Kyle.
Exactly. I was like, other Batman movie, a better one, but I do love Forever. Oh, and Batman's
really? No, really?
In a like campy sort of way.
There's a lot. Maybe it's just because like it was such a fixture in my childhood that like I'm not going to stand here and say that it's better than The Dark Knight, but I get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Oh yeah, Harvey, like Kiss from a Rose.
Batman.
Ugh. Kiss from a Rose is the best Batman theme song, and you know it, Frank.
All right.
Fact. And Batnips are trending now.
That's true.
That's very true. I only interviewed Chris O'Donnell about that 2 months ago, and someone finally asked Joel Schumacher. I'd like to think that I've kept that ball rolling.
That's right. If it hadn't been for Lucretia. Yeah. And I know Chris O'Donnell was excited to talk about it as well.
Yeah, he really was.
All right, real quick, rank them. George Clooney, Val Kilmer. Who's the better Batman?
Val Kilmer.
Yeah, I'm going to say Kilmer, but I don't blame Clooney. I think Clooney did exactly the job that he was hired to do.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't come off well in that movie, I would argue not many people come off all that well in that movie.
No.
But I didn't mind him as Batman. I mean, he's fine.
I think too, especially when you've got, like, I think Uma Thurman got exactly what type of movie she was making and was really leaning into it. And I think
Clooney, and Schwarzenegger too. I thought Schwarzenegger nailed the role for what it was on the page.
Yes. Yeah. So I think Clooney showed up and did his job well, but within the parameters of that movie wasn't even given the opportunity to pop the way some other people did, for better and for not so better. Sometimes. But come on, there's that like sexy gorilla striptease. How many other movies have sexy gorilla costume stripteases, Frank?
Yeah. That's true. When where's George that Clooney scene pulls out the bat credit card.
Like, where's that scene in Dark Knight?
No, that's true.
No sexy gorilla striptease. Yeah. I'm out.
I have to admit, I'm still always a sucker for, as much as those movies can drive me crazy at times, at the end where they always are running towards the camera.
In the Schumacher ones.
Yes, I'm always like, all right, I'm down with that.
It's like the police headquarters has a really long roof.
That's true. Like, all right, that's cool. All right, I'm down with that. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to turn from the kind of news of the day with comic books, and we're going to do our main focus, as I mentioned at the top of the show. It's all about Wonder Woman. Film came out there a couple weeks ago and has been so well received.
Yes.
It's the 75 years of Wonder Woman right now.
Yeah.
And so Wonder Woman, if you've only seen her from the film, there are so many great stories that the filmmakers use as inspiration for the film. Specifically, I feel like a lot of the George Perez run, as well as the Greg Rucka run, too, as well.
Yes, and I also felt like there were nods, very explicit nods, to some of the revamped mythology that exists in New 52 as well.
Now, Wonder Woman, I think if you had to look at Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, of the three, she definitely has the most kind of, I don't want to say like revisions or tweaks or kind of alternate takes on her origin as opposed to the other two. I feel like the other two are really streamlined.
Yeah, the other two, it's pretty well set up. Batman's a rich kid whose parents get shot in front of him. Superman's an alien who's left in Kansas, and that's pretty well been their story. But with Wonder Woman, they've had so many different continuities, always kind of swimming back to the Amazon, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I like that there are two big origins for Diana that I appreciate that they now seem to have streamlined into one story, which is the maybe it wasn't the... Frank would know this. The original one that I am familiar with is the story that her mother told her about how she created her from clay.
Mm-hmm.
And magic essentially brought her to life because she wanted... Hippolyta wanted a child so much. And then I believe it took until New 52, right? Before we found out that is not in fact true. Mm-hmm. What actually happened is that's a story that your mother was telling you. You are actually the daughter of Zeus, who was known to have a lot of lady loves at any given time and made a lot of babies across the cosmos. You, Diana, are one of those babies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we've got now Greg Rucka's come back and kind of said like, oh, well, not all of that is necessarily true, and I'm going to cherry pick bits and pieces from all of it and kind of come up with like what, at least for right now, should be the definitive origin of Wonder Woman. And Greg Rucka's take right now is great. It's done a great job of kind of just going back into Diana's kind of very convoluted history and origins and just trying to, as best they can, streamline it without negating a lot of it that went before. I think the one that probably gets negated the most is probably the Brian Azzarello, Cliff Chiang run. I feel like that one's probably the one that gets negated the most, and I feel like it plays more direct links to the George Perez origin than anything else.
Hmm.
You don't explain. Like, well, elaborate.
Well, only because I feel like that you're really seeing, like, that version of Ares is pretty much, you know, what you're seeing in the comic books currently right now, as well as kind of like served as a visual springboard, at least, for his depiction in the film.
That's true. Mm. That Ares is definitely not the New 52 Ares.
Yeah, and it's just it ties more into, like, some of the origins where you're saying, like, it's like a story that your mom tells you. Where, like, oh, yeah, I made you from clay, and I wanted a daughter so much that the gods gave me this great boon and gave me a daughter.
Wow, she had a nice mom.
That's all she wanted there. Yeah. So for you, for either of you, what was your entry point into Wonder Woman?
I, you know, of course, remember my dad sort of reading me Wonder Woman comics. I had little Wonder Woman pajamas and stuff like that. But my entry more so had to do with the TV series that we would watch on Nick at Night with Linda Carter and how cool that was to see this character in live action. So I grew up with this character in live action, as well as knowing the comic book stories and the origin, being in all my little video games and action figures. So Wonder Woman was always a part of my life.
Was this something that drew you to want, seeing all that made you want to go and read comic books over? Or it's like, you know, I just like her in just other mediums, and not necessarily I was drawn to reading comic book stories.
That's the interesting thing about Wonder Woman, is the other mediums pretty well suffice the character, as opposed to some of the comic book characters, which you wanted to learn more about. With Wonder Woman, it was always pretty well straightforward. And so it didn't really draw me to comics as much as some of the other heroines. Well.
Oh, you, Lex?
I remember seeing the Linda Carter series as well when I was much younger, and I remember seeing Diana featured prominently in a lot of the animated content that they put out. And I remember picking up, you know, this was years ago, and I couldn't even cite specifically even which runs they were, but picking up a few issues here and there of different Wonder Woman runs and enjoying them, but never really keeping up. It actually took me until the Azzarello Cliff Chiang run on New 52 to finally pick up a Wonder Woman book and keep up with it on an ongoing basis. And that was, I think, my way in, and because that clicked with me, and it's, you know, I mean, like any storytelling run that went as long as theirs did, at times, you know, there are peaks and there are not valleys, it never gets bad, but, you know, it goes up and it goes down a little bit and up and it goes down a little bit, but I was grabbed in a way that I don't think I'd ever felt myself grabbed by a Wonder Woman book that I had picked up, and it then motivated me to start going back and to try to learn a little bit more about some of these other comic book runs. And then, of course, you referenced the Greg Rucka stuff, which is what's going on now, and I think that is excellent. I read the first two, because what I think they're doing that's really cool is every other issue is one story.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll tell one, it'll be one issue of one story arc, and then the next issue will be another story arc. So you'll alternate back and forth, and they're all, you know, 5-6 issues each. So the first two story arcs that were released in this single issue alternating fashion was like a year one story, which is what you were talking about, like this redone origin for Diana. And then there was another story which was set in the modern day, which heavily featured Cheetah and her relationship with Barbara Minerva, that I thought was very good. Haven't read the most recent run. I think they've probably got one or two issues left tops before they finish out this next
Issue 24 came out, and I think 25 is his last one.
Yeah, so once that's out, I'm then going to go back and read both of these arcs as well. One, you know, alternating one to one each time. But like, I'm crazy excited about it, because that first run of two story arcs I thought was killer.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned Barbara Minerva and Cheetah, and as a character that I was surprised was not in the film, because that to me was always understood as Wonder Woman's main villain. And we've seen a nod to her on Arrow this season, and I do believe she will be in the Wonder Woman sequel that they're talking about. But yeah, like, this is a character, especially like if you're playing Injustice 2, which is why you probably haven't seen me a lot lately. and that's the thing, is I'm like, this is a character that I was very familiar with in the cartoons and all this, and I can't think of many comics that really depicted that. I just always remember that being her main villain.
Yeah, yeah. What I like about the Rucker Run, I feel like this is probably my favorite interpretation of the Cheetah Wonder Woman relationship, where this is definitely a much more of a close friends that one is taking a kind of a tragic turn, and so Wonder Woman still wants to redeem this person. Mm. That is still, she still sees the friend within her. And I feel like that's a really cool relationship, one that I haven't seen before. It's usually, like, I felt like the Perez stuff was inching towards what Rucka is really kind of fully realized. And so it was good, but not quite what Rucka is really getting to the heart of it. And it's both at times tragic and then reaffirming. I don't want to spoil anything for you, Lex, as you're going to be reading this stuff. But there's
pretty
some,
soon, yeah.
Yeah, there's some nice twists and turns there where you're like, all right, I was not expecting them to go that way, and that's a really cool turn in this relationship.
So then let's flip it. What, Frank, was your way into Wonder Woman, and what, if you had to pick one, if you had the God Killer sword to your throat, and they were like, what is your favorite Wonder Woman story, or say bye-bye to your head?
Ooh.
What do you say?
Man, well, I am. Well,
when you're bound by that lasso,
yeah, that's right. That's right. I would grab that, and it burns, guys. If I just don't go and just tell the truth, it burns, guys. It burns.
Yeah, see, Lex is sick. He went with God Killer Sword, even though Lasso of Truth was like right on the tongue there.
No, because I'm like, oh, that's right. We've got one. It's like this is the one hero who actually has a way to compel you to speak the truth without threatening you with physical violence.
That's true.
So yes,
and boobs. You know, they didn't know that was the secret. That's why only she can do it.
I am torn with a couple. One, I love George Perez, one of my favorite artists. Just the way he would just fill so many characters on a page. I've always had a soft spot for him. So his run that he was both writing and drawing, that first 12 issues is where they really build up the mythology, and you get to see Ares and the other gods of Olympus. I've got a soft spot for that. But I'd probably say that right away. But there's the Rucker Run, I feel like, is just such a nice, modern, fresh retelling of that story that just... I feel like that is a story that it doesn't... I feel like going back and reading the Perez stuff, it does have that... Because it was written in the 80s, so it does have a bit of datedness to it in terms of just at least the dialogue and stuff. But I feel like reading the Rucker stuff, I feel like this is going to... It's not going to seem as dated for a lot longer. And I feel like you could give this to any person 10, 12, 15 years from now, and it would still feel just as fun and fresh as it is reading it today. But I also have a soft spot. John Byrne came in for a run for like 38 issues, and it is bonkers.
It is bonkers.
I love bonkers. But,
well, it's just like, well, first off, he's like, you know, I got to show that Wonder Woman is just as tough as everybody, as the big two, or as Superman. So the first person that they really fight up is Doomsday. And he's got, you know, so of course, Wonder Woman's got to beat Doomsday. She's like, you know what? I'm just as tough as Superman. And then, they have Donna Troy, who's Wonder Girl, who he tries again to John Byrne, says, you know what? I know the real origin of Wonder Girl, and I'm going to tell you all. And it's like, really? This is it? Oh. John Byrne, you shouldn't have done it. It was fine as it was. You didn't need to go in and start messing with stuff. But
who's calling? Oh, it's John Byrne.
Yeah. Hey, John, Frank, how are you?
Frank, he's mad.
Good to see you.
Frank is mad.
Yeah. I mean, I love your Fantastic Four stuff, John. Oh, my God, please. Now, looking at, of course, Licorice is great enough to find us the 75 years Wonder Woman kind of logo they've been doing. And they've got a lot of different images from her out, her varied, her storied career, with a lot of different costumes. Looking at those, which one do you guys favor? She's had many redesigns over the years.
Yeah, to me, the number two is the most iconic. Like, that is what I think of when I think of Wonder Woman.
Agreed.
Mostly because of all the underwear they've sold all over the years that match that. But, yeah, the last one very favors the movie style, which is probably going to be into more people's minds since it's still number one at the box office.
Very true.
Yeah, for me, I would agree. It's still that second one from the left. But in modern context, I feel like my favorite versions of the Wonder Woman look are like that final image, but with a bigger splash of color. Like that second one. And then you've got a couple in the middle. Like, you've got the one where she's got the sword and the armor and the helmet and all that. And I've never been a fan of comic book costumes that are that busy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It just seems like there's too much going on there, and I'm a little bit distracted by the paraphernalia on your clothing.
Yeah.
And see, this is like, you know, in the movie when Steve gives her the glasses, she's too distracting. They must have decided to give her the helmet because she's too pretty and distracting. That's just what I'm going to go with there.
I'm always a sucker for the skirt look. I feel like that skirt just looks like really cool. It was like it still showed her that she was a woman, but it didn't feel as, I don't know, like you didn't have to worry about like the male gaze as much in that sense. But of course, the number two is such the iconic one. Darwin Cooks, who's the third one in from the left, I feel like that's a nice kind of blending of like, hey, we'll still give her a skirt, but she's also an Amazon warrior as well.
And that's the the look that, we saw in, like, for example, like New Frontier.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of a nice blending. But I also, instead of like where she has the boots, she's got like the, almost I want to say like the ballet shoes on with the wrapping all around her legs, her calves. I always kind of like that look too. Kind of a sucker for that.
Those shoes are more comfortable than the boots.
Now, now, many creators have, they've always talked about, like, Wonder Woman is a hard character to write for because she's supposed to be promoting a message of peace, yet she's basically just, you know, opening up a can of whoop-ass constantly on people. And so people have a tough time. How do you kind of really write a story where it's, I'm promoting peace, yet I'm going to beat everybody up if I need to? And some writers don't know exactly how to get into that. Even Grant Morrison was saying that it took him a while to be able to find his way in when he started doing the Wonder Woman Earth One story.
Yes.
I sort of always think that Wonder Woman and Batman are sort of on the same page, because Batman doesn't kill, and he's always looking for peace with violence, which some people have an issue with, but I always thought that Wonder Woman did it with just more flair. And, you know, she had a lot more opportunities than, say, Batman to get the peace without as much violence because she was this Amazon warrior. And so that's why I thought that they had such a good friendship and that sort of same mindset. And we have some chat in here. Bill Cariola said he always loved the Paul Dino story, Spirit of Truth. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, the one with Alex Ross. Was that it?
Bill, is it that one?
Yeah, we are clueless. This is a Frank question.
So Alex, how do you feel?
There's a place we could take this to where we could have a very lengthy socio-philosophical discussion about the fascistic aspects of all superhero characters, but that's a different discussion for a different day. I will say this. I think the movie actually really, really nailed it in it's not so much about, I'll phrase it this way. They say in the movie it's about what you believe. It is about what you love and how passionately you love it and what you're fighting for based on those beliefs. And I think that's the line you have to walk. I think you have to, as a writer, you have to make it abundantly clear. If Wonder Woman, if Diana, who is this ambassador of love and compassion and understanding to the entire world, if she's going to pull that sword out and start swinging it at people's heads, I think you really need to make sure that you've established why this is the morally right thing to do in a way that maybe you don't necessarily have to with a character like Batman, who is always more anger-driven. And I feel like the moral question is, in the Batman stories I've read, more central to his character. Does that track?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because I guess it always comes over, Batman will not kill, and yet Wonder Woman, I feel like that character realizes there are moments that you, in the heat of battle, that you may have to put an enemy down.
Yeah, it's for the greater good, but I think that the movie, as well as most of the incarnations that I'm used to, are with her trying to save everybody. That is her mission, is to the least amount of damage possible, whereas opposed to even Superman, it's very short-sighted in, you know, collateral damage. Wonder Woman tends to think of the big picture. And yes, Bill responded to us, and yes, with Alex Ross.
It was like a big oversized thing they did with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. Mm. They did kind of like this huge, big, kind of treasury-sized stories, which were kind of cool. Kind of doing like a little look back at some of those characters. It's interesting now with the cinematic universe. I feel like Superman is supposed to be like the top of the hill superhero, at least in the comic book universe,
where everybody's basically looking at him. First one,
and everybody's looking to them, kind of like everybody wants to aspire to be Superman. And yet now in the DC cinematic universe, it is Wonder Woman, where I feel like all the other characters right now are aspiring to be Wonder Woman, because she's such an aspirational character in terms of the way that she just deals with everything.
And two, Superman in the DC movies now didn't show up on Earth till, what, about 30 years ago, give or take? But Diana's been here for hundreds of years. And I do think, I really dug that movie. That version of Wonder Woman is, yes, I think, everything that I want Wonder Woman to be, but also, in so many ways, everything I want Superman to be as well. So it is interesting, like, as you say, in a world where we've temporarily sidelined Superman, and before that we had a version of him which I think was at odds with what a lot of people are familiar with when they look at that character, I think it is actually fantastic that we're maneuvering Wonder Woman into that position.
I think that Wonder Woman for the DCU and for the DC TV is Supergirl, are what we want Superman to be. But they're doing it, and they're doing it so much better than we've seen for Superman in such a long time. I mean, the Christopher Reeves Superman is phenomenal, and the thing is, you know, Patty Jenkins drew from that, and that's why you can see that, is that this is what we want from Superman. But some people don't want to make our Superman like that, but
Well, she stopped short, thankfully, of putting an Otis type character in there, which thank you, Patty Jenkins.
But I do think crazy. Too, in fairness to all of the writers who have tried to take on the character of Superman, much like Wonder Woman, I think Superman is a very difficult character to write well, and I actually think Superman, so far anyway, seems to lend himself better to literary stories than film stories, because if you're making a $200 million action tentpole movie, every so often the dude's going to have to punch something really hard for about 7 to 15 minutes. And those stories, for my money, are never the most interesting Superman stories, but those are the types of stories that studios are funding and putting into theaters more frequently.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could have him do
Jimmy
it. We can have him just deal with Red Kryptonite and have like a lion head. Can we do those movies? Let's
just
do that.
The super
dude, I've
weird
got a
stuff.
Really cool lion head mask at my brother's house. Like, we could make that movie, guys.
Like, there is now a movie that did really, really well at the box office where a major plot point is that Ego the Living Planet had sex with a lot of women.
That's true.
Audiences, I think, are ready for weirdness.
Yes.
So, as we're getting ready to wrap up, before we leave, real quick, we want to just acknowledge the passing of Adam West.
Yes.
I think if you think of Batman, I think the first name that's going to pop into your head and the first image of Batman is going to be the Adam West version of that character. He's been he's had an impact on so many people throughout the years. And we just want to just acknowledge that. I know Lucretia has got a great little story about him as well.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Batman, especially the Adam West Batman, because that was actually my first incarnation, and as well as the Michael Keaton movies. And when I was a little girl, I went to meet Adam West at Dallas Comic Con, and this was like when he was doing Family Guy as the mayor, so, you know, prime Adam West as we know him. And it was so great because he had done this porno, and my dad told me about it, and I thought that was a really funny story. See, I've always been weird. So I asked him about what he felt when he went to do the Happy Hooker Goes to Hollywood, because this was after Batman. And he goes, "Little girl, I thought it was a comedy until they brought the second unit out." And I'll always have that story. It's so sweet.
You told us that before we went live, and it reminded me of this other story that, if you're listening, you may have seen was being circulated on Twitter in the days following his passing. And the story is essentially that at one point in the 60s, Adam West and Frank Gorshin were kicked out of a Hollywood orgy because they refused to break character as Batman and the Riddler.
Would you want to? Because I understand, like, you know, getting your freak on with, you know, Frank Gorshin's Riddler, but I mean, Batman at an orgy just doesn't seem like he belongs at an orgy.
No, but I like to think that he would be Adam West Batman. I think he would stand quietly in the corner, and he would just make sure that everybody was being responsible and using protection, and then would be like, You should do this safely. It's very important. He'd hand out like bat condoms and stuff.
Wipe up, old chum.
Holy butt sex, Batman! And Burt Ward shows up.
I'm now gonna have nightmares featuring the line "Wipe up, old chum."
And holy butt sex, Batman! Burt Ward shows up.
Oh man.
Well, certainly. I mean, Batman 66, great show. I mean, it's been released in a box collection. Mm. Finally, after so many years, kind of caught up in legal.
There was a big to-do over the rights issues with that show, which is why it took such a long time for us to see merchandise, to see a physical disc release of it. But now it's available. And still, I feel like, too, thankfully, people have come around on that show, because I feel like there were a number of years where a lot of people who were avowed diehard Batman fans really shunned it because they thought that it was silly, it was spitting on what the character was quote unquote supposed to be. Of course, the notion that this character that's not a real person, doesn't exist in our world, is supposed to be any one thing, I find a little weird. But what a lot of people miss A, is how genuinely funny that show was. B, what a brilliant comedic performer Adam West was. C, there's no Batman. We don't get to Dark Knight Returns without that TV show. The Batman comic book series would have died in the 60s were it not for the 66 Adam West Batman TV series renewing interest in the character and that property.
And I think that if you think your Batman is any better than any other Batman, you need to see the Goldbergs episode directed by Kevin Smith. I don't regularly watch the show. I love it, but I just don't have a lot of time. But it's a perfect sitcom that explains, because it's based in the 1980s, where this guy, Adam Goldberg, was filming things with his family, and he did a lot of stuff with his grandpa. And that the timing of this show was when the 1989 Michael Keaton Batman came out, and then his grandpa was into the 66 Batman. And it's this telling of a story of him being annoyed with his grandpa's version and his version. And we're experiencing that now. Because how many of us with our dads were like, oh, the 66 or the 89 is not our Batman. And then it's Christian Bale. And it's just such a timely episode that goes back to even the 66. And I recommend anybody watch it. Yeah.
Well, I feel like it was used as just a cheap punchline for writers. Anytime you saw like a comic book story written about anybody, hey, the 80s, 90s, even the early 2000s, they'd always go, you know, bang, pow, smash, comics are blank. And you're like, oh, okay, come on. Batman was existed, but there's been other things that existed in the medium as well that we don't always have to just go to that easy, cheap thing.
Yes. Yeah.
But he and Burt Ward did at least the voices for a DC animated special. For for Batman 66.
Return of the Caped Crusaders,
yes.
Which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, I thought it was great, and so it's at least a chance, you know, to at least hear them, and at least see the animated versions of them do at least one last adventure. And I know they wanted to do another one. I don't know if they actually get a chance.
They had cast, they cast William Shatner as Two-Face, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know if they recorded dialogue before anything happened. Yeah, I would love if they did. Because they have William Shatner as...
Yeah, and Shatner's amazing. Come on. I hope that, guys, if there's any possibility of making this happen, we need to ensure
I would, even if he only recorded partial dialogue, I would be fine. Get your best Adam West impersonator. At least just finish it up. Because that would be... I mean, how can you leave just half of that unfinished?
Sure. Adam West.
Hi, Lucretia Lyon. Lucretia Lyon's available to record the rest of those lines. Yeah, and I do hope that if anybody's listening and you haven't checked out the Batman 66 TV series, now that it is more widely available than it's ever been before, I would encourage people to go check it out. Forget what you think you know about it. It's quite smart. It's quite funny. And Adam West was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant performer.
Yeah, and Bill weighs in on the chat. He said, holy butt sex Batman is a sentence I never thought I'd hear today. Also, the Grey Ghost episode of Batman, the animated series, was a wonderful nod to Batman 66.
Very true.
Totally.
Yes, where Adam West plays that character, and we get a team-up of the greatest Batman that there has ever been, and the other greatest Batman that there has ever been.
Yeah. How can you go wrong there? Yeah. And Jeff Parker did a long run of Batman 66 comic books as well, too. In fact, there's one just wrapping up right now where he crosses over with Wonder Woman 77, the Linda Carter version.
And so. I know, too, Kevin Smith and Ralph Garman did a Batman 66 meets the Green Hornet comic book as well.
Yes. He's also crossed over Man from U.N.C.L.E., the TV show The Avengers, and it's great stuff. So really some great comic book versions of those characters to read as well. Ladies and gentlemen, we talked a lot about comics right now. That was so incredible. But you know what? The fun doesn't stop here. It just gets started. Because even though we're wrapping up here on the Comic Book Exchange, you can still like us on Facebook. You can still desperately, please, give us those 5-star reviews. And don't just do it for me and Lucretia. More importantly, do it for Lex Michael.
We need enough that I can fill a bag for an IV drip and just pump those 5-star validations directly into the vein here.
Keep him alive, folks. We need him. He's a national treasure. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Give us a thumbs up while you're there. And thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. We really appreciate your thoughts as well as we broke down all these comic book related news this week. We'll be back next week with another hot episode of the Comic Book Exchange. Oh, but you know what? We also should find out where to find us as well. It's been a little rusty on that close, Frank. Lex Michael.
It's been a while.
Lex Michael, if they want to find you and just see how you're doing with those 5-stars, where can they find you?
Until the next hot episode of Comic Book Exchange, you can find me all over social media at the Lex Michael.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
And I'll be rehearsing these closes for preparation for next week to make sure I really stick the landing. But in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, we'll see you back here next week at the Comic Book Exchange right here on Book Circle Online.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro,
We would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.